Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. This is the first episode in a new series brought to you by Meat and Livestock Australia. My name is Dr. Joanna McMillan, and I'm a dietitian and nutrition scientist and food futurist is my new title, which I love. And the purpose of today's podcast is that we are discussing Make Every Bite Count, which I love is a brilliant, brilliant name because it really says what it is. It's an empowering guide to healthy eating and how we as dietitians can use food skills to bridge the gap between the Australian dietary guidelines and Australian dietary patterns, because how we eat and what people want to know and how we can really encourage them to eat in a very different way to target both nutrition and sustainability and some other factors that we'll bring in today are really all about food skills. So that's what we're bringing it down to today. So I have two absolutely fantastic guests with me here today who are going to help to explain this and discuss it. First of all, I have Howard, who is essentially a consumer behavior expert. Is that a good way to describe you, Howard?
I'm happy with that, yeah.
He has a market research company, Pollinate. He's been doing this for many, many, many years. And really what's good about this is he's going to give us some really insightful information about what people need, what their attitudes are, and will help us to understand what we really need to be teaching people and helping people with in order to change dietary patterns. So thank you for being here, Howard.
Pleasure.
And I also have someone who is probably familiar to most dietitians listening, and that is Emma Sterling. And she is really leading the charge in this new area called culinary nutrition. So she's our culinary nutrition expert. And what I love about this is, do you know, Emma, I don't know if I've told you this story actually, but many, many, many years ago when I won an award at the Australian Food Awards for one of my books, and the whole conference room, I think there were about 1,000 people in the room, were almost all chefs and food people and food writers. And there was one tiny little table of nutrition and dietitian type people. And I stood on the stage and I said, you know what, it's time that the chefs and the nutritionists and dietitians all met in the middle, instead of you guys all having fun with food, us being thought of as having terribly boring food and just talking about the dietary guidelines. And we've got to meet in the middle. And that's what I feel like you're doing, Em.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's great to be here, Joanne. Thank you. That's I love that anecdote. Yeah, I've certainly been trying for about 10 years to build this, break down the barriers and bring this interprofessional practice together. So chefs and dietitians, it's a match made in heaven.
That's what I think too, yes. So, well, let's kick off by starting to talk a little bit about what Australians are doing in the kitchen. What are our habits? How much are we home cooking? What sort of an influence can we have? Because at the end of the day, we can't help people to make better food choices if we're not giving them relevant advice. So, Howard, if I could start with you, what can you tell us from your research about what do Australians actually want to know about healthy eating?
Okay. Well, the first thing to recognise is that healthy eating is kind of a subset of eating. I know that sounds bizarre. But
no, not at all.
The most commonly asked question in Australia every single day of the week is pretty much, what's for dinner? And if we recognise that that's how people, or let's talk about them as consumers when they're making choices, that's how they approach food pretty much as a start point. It's like, right, what's for dinner? So their start point generally isn't thinking about the planet or their nutritional health or whatever it might be. But most people are literally thinking, what are we having for dinner tonight? And then, of course, when we're applying that to making healthy choices or nutrition, there's a whole lot of trade-offs going on. It's really not straightforward. And so whilst we like to think that we need to give them information on whether it's portion size or whatever, it's or healthy eating guidelines, in truth, we just need to make it easy.
Yeah, and is this in part because people are just so busy?
I think people have always been busy, and we find time for what matters for us. And the truth there is that the glaring insight is make it easy for people. If you can make it easy for people, and they talk much more about recipe cards, for instance, and advice and tips and tricks than they talk about portion guidance. They kind of all know about portion guidance for every food. It doesn't really make a lot of difference. What they want to do here is make it easy for me to have something that is within those guidelines. So make it easy and people will simply do it.
So we're not saying that people are not interested in healthy eating.
Correct.
They just want, but they do want it also to be delicious, right?
Yeah, I think there's been a bit of a, over the last 25 years, we've been doing this sort of research for so many different sectors of industry. The one thing about food that's often sort of missing and absent is the joy of food. And we find increasingly people are just exhausted. Oh my gosh, you know, this is no good, or that's bad for me, or too much of this. Really what we need to do is allow people, give them permission to make good choices, if you like, within what's important to them, and then sort of wrap that up in a way, if you like, sort of nudge theory that helps them or leads them towards adopting, let's call them, healthier habits. But it's got to be based on joy.
Oh, I could not agree more. Joy is at the foundation of every program I ever talk about. And I do think it's something that we've often missed when we've got to move away from that more sort of dogmatic lecturing style of telling people what's healthy and what to eat, because it just becomes confusing. So Emma, can I bring you in here, because you're really leading this emerging field of culinary nutrition. That's sometimes a hard phrase to get my mouth around. And I absolutely love that, because it's bringing together delicious food, that whole what Howard's saying about the joy of eating, but also targeting better nutrition. But I guess where we're really getting to here is that food skills is kind of trying to bridge that gap between dietary recommendations. And I always say, you know, I always ask when I'm doing a presentation, by the way, I always say, who's read the Australian Dietary Guidelines? And almost always nobody puts their hand up. And if someone does put their hand up, I go, are you a dietitian? They go, yes. So we've got this problem between the dietary guidelines. And then, as Howard's saying, people just want to know what's for dinner. And is, in your mind, is that what's happening here? Is this what culinary nutrition is doing and food skills teaching is doing in order to try to bridge that gap? So can you explain that for us a little more?
Yeah, absolutely, Joy. And I love how bringing the joy of food. Well done, Howard. That's fantastic. Yeah, look, I absolutely think that most dietitians, we approach meals with the dietary guidelines and the five food groups up in our head. But we know that's not the way that the average Australian approaches a meal. They, as Howard says, I just want to know what's for dinner. So food skills really is that bridge between the dietary, you know, recommendations, whether it's the food groups or serve size. And really what people are doing, in the real world. And so to get that right, food skills teach, you know, how to buy, how to cook, how to grow, read labels. But it's also those things about making clever substitutions, using leftovers, all those things that are really the practical side. And I think as dietitians, we need to embrace that space a lot more. We're very good at nutrition education. We need to embrace the space of food skill education. Within the norm of people's really busy lives and different recipes and mixed meals and cultural meals and all the things that goes on, we're experts to lead that space as well.
Yeah, I often wonder if we've actually lost some of the skills that are, depending on your age, I'm going to show my age here, your sort of mother and grandmother had. And especially, you know, when I talk to my family about what happened in the post-war years in particular, no, they were accustomed to rations and budgets and making food last for the family for the week. And, you know, one meal would be turned into four across the week. Yeah. You know, do you think that that's part of this? We're bringing back that sort of food skill teaching?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think that's, you know, the as the food landscape changes, we need to, you know, look at and meet people where they need, but also as the dietetic landscapes change, you know, Joe, different training over the decades, the roles and the competencies of dietitians have changed. And maybe it's something that we've lost a bit of that connection to food over time. It just gets a little bit pushed out. We didn't want to, you know, necessarily embrace that space, but this is what people are asking for. This is what people really need. It's that bridge between, you know, the dietary guidelines and what they're actually doing. We need to meet that bridge with food skills.
Yeah, that's right. And so, Howard, I always come back to this, because we can get very excited about the science and the, you know, all the sort of real intricacies around nutrition science in particular. And we can get a little bit lost about what people actually want and what people actually need. So give us some guidance there from your research about what you've uncovered, some really insightful stuff from consumers about what they need from us.
I think the first thing, coming back to your point about science and building on Emma's point, science generally contradicts with common sense, and the consumer uses common sense. The cognitive science is called heuristics. In the real world, we call them shortcuts or rules of thumb. And that's the skills and knowledge that we need. That's the practical tips, the everyday stuff that, frankly, most of us use most of the time with most of the decisions we make, and food's no different. So the minute we try and talk about science, and I loved your point, Emma, about the five food groups, the consumer's already not listening. They're not even sure what the five food groups are. So what we need to do here is rules of thumb, simple tips, practical shortcuts, and then we're in a good place. The more we try and talk about science, actually, the more we lose people. So that's the first thing I'd say. Just as an aside, we've done work that shows that most young people can't name a beetroot. They don't know what it is. So when we talk about, yeah, it's a bit sad, isn't it? Let alone, I think, leeks were even more sadly unknown. So when we think about skills, there's a lot of base knowledge as well as practical skills that are just not there. And of course, the best thing is don't try and teach people, make it easy. If you give them a recipe and here's how to do blah and it looks great, well, then they can probably, through the framework you've given, they can adopt that. And that's certainly what we've found is people the lowest useful information that scored on the research we did was guidance on eating recommended portions or tips on choosing nutritious food. And the highest things were things like making the most of leftovers and tips to achieve zero food waste. And if you think about it, why is that? Well, because when I'm preparing food, if my children don't eat it, I've got the food waste. I've got the responsibility. And that is there every day. And I feel like a failure. They didn't eat it. And oh, no, and I've got to throw this away. So all this guilt and shame and disappointment is now compounding what should have been joyous and easy. So make it easy, and if it's not food waste, because, well, that's okay, what's left over I can turn into a meal tomorrow, and they seem to enjoy that, then we create a positive cycle. So that's the difference. Less science and more make it easy.
Yeah, and make it easy, but make it easy to have those more nutritious foods. Because what I was immediately thinking as you were talking there is it's very easy to slide into, well, I just give the kids that because I know they're going to eat it. And if that's a less healthy choice, then we're not achieving our goal as dietitians, you know. And that's where the resources come in to actually help. So these, you know, the Make Every Bite Count is not just about... And really, it is about reducing food waste at the end of the day because it's Make Every Bite Count. I mean, the name is very clever because it means Make Every Bite Count nutritionally, but it also means Make Every Bite Count so we're not wasting food and then we're also improving sustainability. So it's quite a clever way of pulling these things together. And I do recognise that, yes, you know, nutrition science is always evolving. The dietary guidelines are currently under review. I mean, it does get confusing for us as dietitians, never mind for the consumers. So... why do people, or what do people want to help them to change? This is an empowering guide to healthy eating. How can we use this to actually make this very effective for the consumer?
Well, exactly as you said, Joanna, the thing about nutrition or sustainability and sustainable eating is another area we've researched, is it means different things to different people at different times. And so if you just say, right, this is a nutritious meal, well, kind of that depends on my perspective. Am I an athlete or am I obese? And where am I at? I mean, it doesn't mean anything of itself. Make Every Bite Count is incredibly powerful because it is relevant to you, whatever your perspective, whatever your point of view. So it could be saving money. It could be saving in terms of real waste, as it were, as opposed to waste food, your waistline. And it could be obviously saving the planet as well. So Make Every Bite Count is relevant to me. It can evoke a thoughtful and considered choice, irrespective of what I'm seeing as important. So Make Every Bite Count is what we call multivalent. It literally is a really good guide, whatever your perspective on food.
So Emma, make this really practical for us then. How as dietitians should we be using Make Every Bite Counts? How does this come into us teaching food skills?
Yeah, look, I think we need to really, you know, focus and embrace, as I said, that space as food educators, not just nutrition educators. And it really provides so many opportunities to address what we've already discussed, but also other key drivers, things like flavour. You know, we talked about the joy of eating, but let's not forget flavour and taste. I mean, chefs are fantastic at flavour pairing and flavour balancing. We need to embrace that space too. So it may just be simple things in food skills like providing smarter shopping tips, you know, kitchen hacks. How do you batch cook three meals from one? How do you cut down food waste and use your leftovers in really clever ways? Or how do you keep the vegetable trimmings in a container in the fridge and at the end of the week make a soup? It's all this sort of very practical ideas that we know absolutely translates to dietary guidelines and all the other, you know, food sustainability and other things that we really want to influence. But it's just that practical side that we are very well versed in, and we can upskill and increase our competencies in the space around food skill education.
Yeah, look, I think you're right. When I think about my most popular segments or most popular social media posts, they're always surrounding tips and food hacks, not me actually talking about, you know, where do you get your iron? Where do you get your calcium? What's the portion size of veggies?
Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
That's right. And I think that when you look at you know, modern social media, I mean, the TikTok, a lot of TikToks filled with you know, and all the teenage friends that we have, they're all, you know, it's the viral TikTok pasta or the, you know, the whatever is going viral at that stage. But why don't we embrace that and we meet that audience with our viral TikTok pasta that just happens to have a dietitian's overview on that development. Yeah.
For sure. And doesn't that sound like more fun? Dietitians can have more fun with food, I reckon. Well, Howard, you've actually researched whether the Make Every Bite Count resources do resonate across all age groups. So what were your findings there?
Well, the simple answer is yes. In fact, the Make Every Bite Count idea, and I should say it's an idea, so it translates all of that science and that information that's a bit dry into something really accessible for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then we tested this against different age groups. It's got universal appeal across all age groups. I should say as well, we tested it across different food groups. It works for vegetables and fruits and poultry and grain, just about everything. Less or the least so for things like snacks and processed food. And there's an implicit truth in that, of course. So that obviously works. So it works universally across all food groups. In terms of the benefits as well, most people, I think it was 73%, said this sounds like a great initiative. 68% said, look, I really want to know more about this. This sounds really good. And 66%, which is the key, said, I can see myself applying this to the way that I eat. So it literally represents that bridge across which, as a simple way for the nutritional information to travel. And then we can package that information up in a way that's now relevant for each different age group or each different context. So Make Every Bite Count works for just about everyone, works for all ages, works for pretty much all different types of food, and people want it.
Yeah, which is great. So it's adaptable. In other words, it's a framework that is allowing us to then personalise the advice and the different information that you might need depending on your own personal needs.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So we've got another complication that we've had to bring in terms of our thinking, which I know from work with consumers that it can become just another headache, is this idea of now not only have we got to think about what's good for us and what's good for the budget, but now we're thinking about the planet as well. So we've got this whole area of sustainability that's something I've become increasingly involved in. So there is confusion around this, but Make Every Bite Count helps us here too. So Howard, let's just delve into your research first. What insights does it give us about sustainability?
Okay, well, the first thing is that almost everyone in Australia wants to be more sustainable. And we've been tracking that data for about 20 years now, and that's fairly consistent. In terms of food, the part that the consumer owns is food waste. So they would love the food production system and the whole system and whatever to be more sustainable. But they see food waste as the bit they own. And if you think about it, that makes sense. You buy a coffee, you've got the takeaway cup at the end of it, and you think, oh, I should have had my keep cup. And it's the same with food waste. It's the tangible thing that is the, if you like, the burden of guilt that we as consumers own. And of course, for food waste, that's a regular thing. That's three meals a day, every dinner time, especially, is that focus. Like, did I get it right, if you like? Mm-hmm. And then I've got the burden of the guilt with food waste. The beautiful thing about this is we've got 90% of Australians that we did the research with say, I'm interested in or extremely interested in the idea of sustainable eating. And Make Every Bite Count is now the vehicle, the framework for that. Here we go. What this does is it talks straight to food waste. When we asked people about Make Every Bite Count, we had 73% of people saying, I want to know small steps I can take towards practicing sustainable eating, and reducing food waste was one of the key things in that. So all of a sudden, Make Every Bite Count suggests to people that this is going to help me with reducing food waste as well. And that's obviously the burden of guilt that I want relieved.
And what's great about that is actually we've got good research from data here in Australia showing that the number one thing that consumers can do to improve the environmental footprint of their diet is to reduce food waste.
Exactly.
So it's very nicely, the research is all nicely aligning. So I'm not sure people actually understand that it is such an important step, but hearing your research is actually quite gratifying that they do understand it's really important to reduce their food waste.
Yeah, and I think people want to close the loop. They don't want to feel guilty. At the same time, they want their families and themselves to eat, you know, healthy, balanced, nutritious meals that they enjoy. It all makes sense.
Mm. Yeah. So it's a really engaging topic, and it's something that we can very easily talk about. So, I mean, Emma, what sort of things are you teaching people in your field in terms of helping them to reduce food waste?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly as a university educator and looking at the next range of dietitians, we teach how to run cooking classes online, because we want all our new dietitians to be very confident in embracing this very hands-on space. And I absolutely agree that when you teach food skills, you are by default teaching sustainable eating practices. That just comes naturally to us as dietitians, whether it's about using affordable or shopping for affordable ingredients like canned legumes where you use the whole can and there's no waste, or looking at no waste cooking. There's actually a whole hashtag of no waste recipes that are online. So we really see that this is a great future for dietitians to embrace the space, whether it's running an online cooking class, whether it's booking your local community centre, whether it's just communicating in a more food skills focused way on social media. We're really well equipped to do this, and it's quite easy when you sit back. You don't need all the overheads that you might expect.
Yeah, I think that raises a really good point, because dietitians now, perhaps compared to when you and I were roughly the same age, Emma, when we first trained, you know, dietitians had a much narrower field of where we work. Today, dietitians are working in so many different areas, from private practice to clinical to media to public health to, you know, all sorts of areas of lifestyle medicine. And so, you know, you've described some ways there, but how can the Make Every Bite Count resources and how can this idea of teaching food skills be applied across all of those different work settings?
Yeah, so we're really seeing, and what so excites me about culinary nutrition is that we're really seeing it being able to come to life in all of our domains of dietetic practice, you know, whether it's through social prescribing and a community kitchen and a program where dietitians are deeply involved in a sort of a community nutrition initiative. There might be a garden, permaculture and a community garden as well. In clinical settings, we're seeing teaching kitchens within hospitals now, giving vital food skills to people before they're discharged or coming back as outpatients. We're seeing, you know, meal delivery companies employing dietitians just for their food skills and their, you know, expertise in nutrition, but also that they can test recipes and come up with flavour trends and talk about food. So I actually see opportunity for culinary nutrition to be in every part of our workforce and actually create great new opportunities for the future of dietetics.
Yeah, great. I think it sort of it almost revitalizes our profession, doesn't it? Making us much more relevant for the future of food, as well as being able to talk through the science. So to me, that's what is fantastic about the Make Every Bite Counts, is that it is a resource for us to be using in order to help to teach people. Because the way that I frame it is, you know, I still want people to be having those nutrient-dense foods like, you know, meat. Yes, we want them to boost their plant food intake, especially veggies. But that's what this is teaching, isn't it? It's teaching them about how to, it's not just about where meat and especially red meat's fitting into the diet. It's actually teaching them about those balanced meals, but in a more fun way, while at the same time reducing food waste, helping them to manage their budget. Because actually, Howard, that was something you mentioned to me earlier. This is still a big part of people's choices too, isn't it? About, you know, cost of living rises and making food more affordable. So we want them to have this healthy diet within budget.
Yeah, and if you think about Make Every Bite Count, there's a subliminal subconscious here. What am I counting? And at the moment, cost of living pressures are incredibly high. So this is actually a call to action to say, "Ooh, you want to make sure that you're managing your budget as well." But this is crucial. When we tested Make Every Bite Count, we had 71% of people saying it will make it easier to balance the different foods in my diet. And also, how about this one? It inspires me to be more considered and mindful with the way that I eat. So what this really does is it says, think about what you're spending your money on. And think about, you know, is this a balanced meal? And then think about how you're going to put all that together. So what it does, effectively, it slows people down. It makes them think. It makes them think more broadly. And that's your opportunity. And if we come back to, we talked earlier about, you know, skills our grandparents may have, but we've forgotten. This is that moment. And it just suggests, you know, well, take a moment here. Have a think about this. And that should be saving money because we're wasting less food. And that's also saving money and wasting less food because we're considering a meal that is actually more balanced and more healthy. It makes me feel good about myself. And at the same time, I can sit back and go, oh, this is probably better for the planet because I've wasted less food and eaten a more balanced meal. So it wins on every level.
Yeah, and it is. That's what we need to know, understand about food sustainability, is that it's about eating to your nutritional needs. Essentially what this is a resource to get us eating closer to the dietary guidelines, but it's put together in a much more practical, fun, balanced way. And then by doing so, you're improving the sustainability of the diet you're following. Exactly. So it's a win. It's a win-win-win. Nutrition, budget, sustainability is there. So, yeah, essentially that's what we're saying. So food skills, do you want to sum up for me, Emma, then, just as a final thought, what food skills are, give the dietitians listening a sort of overview of what we need to be thinking of, put it into a concise little take-home message.
Yeah, so absolutely, Joe. And I think, you know, as our modern landscape changes, as our food scene changes, people are eating differently, but it still comes back. You know, our dietary guidelines haven't changed that much. And we know that, you know, the next iteration is coming, but it's not going to be that. We know what people need to be doing for good nutrition. So food skills really is that bridge between our dietary recommendations, whether it's five food groups, SIRSIs, and what people are actually, we know they're doing now with their dietary patterns. And, you know, I love that MLA is investing in this sort of data to help us stay up to date with what people are eating. We need that data. So as dietitians, we need to embrace food skills, not just nutrition education. Give people very practical guidelines how to buy, cook, grow, read labels, plan, batch cook, use leftovers, create one meal that can adapt to five different people in the family. It's that really practical side that might be the missing ingredient that we haven't had in our skill set up until now.
Yeah, for sure. So we're bringing the fun back into the joy is still there in food and essentially...
And the flavour.
And the flavour, yes, of course. You know, no one's going to follow that boring diet unless we can make it flavourful and delicious. So MLA's Make Every Bite Count resources are essentially providing practical ways for us as dietitians to promote healthy eatings, but in different settings. So for more information, you can visit mlahealthymeals.com.au. So Emma and Howard, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. And you can join us next time when we talk about how Make Every Bite Count food skills can be applied in busy young families. Thank you so much for listening.